Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good evening, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Good morning. Good evening, Mr. Allen. I was thinking in terms of being in another time zone, if you will, just a short period ago. This winter chill out here, I kind of feel like I'm in the Northwest Territories up around Yellowknife and the Yukon and just on the edge of the Arctic Circle. I mean, wow, this is really something else. But we need the cold because I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, racial tensions are extremely high. Ethnic tensions are extremely high. In fact, they go all the way into the corridors and the offices of City Hall. We have that much racial political tension, if you will. And, of course, the attacks on the African-American community after the shooting death of a 69-year-old Caucasian along the 3700 block in his home on Aldridge in North Minneapolis has things are at a fever pitch, Mr. Allen, I have to tell you.
Oh, yes, they are. I mean, I would have to agree with you 100%. There's a lot of craziness going on right now that we're going to be addressing during this show. And we just want to let you know before we get into it, the phone lines are open, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And caller stand by. Mr. Edwards, looks like we have a caller already.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they want to ask us. But, callers are always important. They're the lifeblood of any talk program. Let's put the caller on, see what they have to say. Okay.
Hello, caller. You're live on the air. Go ahead, please. Hello. Okay,
We don't have any time for any fun and games because we're only on for an hour tonight, and there's a lot of tension here in the Twin Cities. Let's start with the situation at the political caucuses of the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, where police ultimately had to be called. Don, I've researched this. It's been since 1937 was the last time that armed police were brought into caucuses, and the caucus had to be canceled and all actions vacated, if you will. 1937 was the last time that we had this level of violence. Now I'm finding out that there were two separate caucuses, one in the Cedar Riverside area and the other one in the Stewart neighborhood. And in both situations amongst factions of both Somalis and Caucasians, supporters in the case of Cedar Riverside, supporters of the longtime state representative, if you will, Phyllis Kahn, 40 years, Don, representative of that area over there on the edge of downtown Minneapolis and back that way, fighting in both places, if you will, the Brian Coyle Center, the scene last night of pitch battles. Now, this has carried over into, Don, understand this. This is, unbelievable. This has carried over into the Minneapolis City Council.
Uh-oh.
Last night we had staff members of respected council members attacking and hitting verbally. I mean, not verbally, but physically punching, slapping, scratching, and et cetera. And the fallout is just unbelievable. We have a city council member, Democrat from the South Side. I understand Elizabeth Glidden and her supporters are asking for police action against some Somali activists who were involved in an attacking, staff members, I guess, of Ms. Glidden's office. Ms. Glidden, Democrat 8th Ward here in our city, if you will. Attempts being made to ask the city attorney, whose office is also under attack, to process the possibility of some kind of offense, criminal offense. But the tensions are extremely high as we talked on. And, maybe we'll get a call or something from someone that can explain this internal fighting that is going on within the Somali community, if you will. And then these attacks and assaults between city council staff members. Can you believe that, Don?
That's incredible, Mr. Edwards. That's incredible. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I would have thought that, well, you know, maybe the media here, the majority media, the people who have the big bucks would kind of get on top of that and explain just what this is. It appears that the newly elected Somali councilman is not being spoken of very nicely right now at this hour. It appears his faction and other factions did battle last night. And, you know, you have to have concern, particularly after, you know, that explosion out there in the Cedar Riverside area back just around the 1st of January, you know, over a month ago.
Did you say explosion?
Yes.
What,
that's the
what,
one they were trying to say was a gas explosion, and it was not. It appears that it probably was a explosive device.
Yeah, and, you know, we haven't heard a peep out of the media or anybody else or nothing out of the mayor's office regarding that large explosion. And
yeah,
so that's kind of interesting.
Don, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I know people will criticize this because Mr. Allen and I have been told that, you know, really you're not supposed to talk about that. Also, I would be remiss because it unfortunately, with no African-American representation any longer in the city council, apparently yesterday, Marsha Mays, the mother of the little black child that was shot and killed just the day after Christmas back in, what was it, 2011, Don?
Yes, sir.
She went to the mayor's office, Mayor Betsy Hodges, and was in tears, I understand, according to reliable sources within the council, the city council, indicating that there has been absolutely no progress or even ongoing investigation of the tragic death of her baby child, shot and killed, you remember, in his home on a, you know, wintry evening, the day after Christmas kind of thing. And she appealed to the mayor to, you know, at least attempt to encourage somebody to do something. But people are saying that really there's really no interest, even though it was specific members of the Minneapolis Police Department. People need to know that before they get all pumped up, who actually went over to the legislature and lobbied and received an additional $60,000 for the reward leading to the death of Tyrone Mays. And here is mother up in the mayor's office, Betsy Hodges, indicating how poorly she has been treated, how the mother has been treated by the law enforcement authorities since this tragic event. I just don't know what is happening, Don. I mean, there is so much tension right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of tension all down in City Hall. You know, the Minnesota chapter of the National Lawyers Guild is opposing the reappointment of Susan Siegel, the Minneapolis City Attorney, who is not really doing much and at all whatsoever. Because, like you're saying, Mr. Edwards, we have little Michael Sullivan, 9-year-old Michael Sullivan. We have the Mays child you're talking about. We have about 6 to 8 homicides just in North Minneapolis alone with no suspects, no arrests, no investigation, no self-initiated investigation by the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights on some questionable items. I mean, there seems to be a consistent pattern here, and logic would denote that one thing would follow another one, you know, but all of a sudden when you turn to the black community, it stops at the first question.
I'm concerned as a longtime activist and veteran of the civil rights battles, if you will, for what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing, particularly these confrontations. People need to understand you cannot get into the political process and interfere with it as was attempted last night. In fact, we're now hearing, as both sides are pointing fingers, that Brian Rice, an attorney and also an attorney for the Park Board and the son of the legendary longtime Minnesota legislator Jim Rice, we called him Boss Jim Rice, who ran the Northside political machine for many, many years, was threatened last night after he had set up a table for candidate and incumbent Phyllis Kahn, that Brian Rice was threatened at the Brian Coyle Center That's just not good, not healthy, if you will, particularly with Homeland Security all over the place as an outgrowth of the explosion there along, what was it, 517 Cedar or thereabouts, Don. And I'm just a little concerned about the stability of our city right now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Mr. Edwards, I've attended a couple of meetings at that Brian Coyle Center, and I mean, I left pretty pissed off. Okay, this is the right coming out of me right now. The right, you know, GOP side.
Yes, I can tell.
I just have to share this with you. Okay, you know, this is America. You know, we have processes here, and we do them in English. Okay, we don't exclude everybody in the room. And I went to
okay.
And,
I've been hearing that before. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, wait, what are we doing here? This is a community meeting, and there are more than Somalis in this room. There are African Americans. There are Caucasians here. There are Hispanic Latinos here. And you're going to bust this whole presentation out in Somali? No. That's not how we operate.
Yeah, well, I understand. That's what happened at Brian Coyle and at the Stewart caucus in the Stewart neighborhood. I just thought people had a little bit better handle on that. But Don, let me also do this, because we said right at the top of this program, and by the way, the phone lines are open for anyone that wants to examine what is being talked about on this program. We know there's a great amount of caution in our city right now because of the racial and ethnic, religious, political tensions, if you will, all of them. Isn't that amazing? The legendary Johnny Northside, Johnny Hoff, if you will, I think you know Johnny, was absolutely outraged after a tragedy, the shooting of a white homeowner in his home, inside of his home, along the 3700 block of Aldridge Avenue North here in our city of Minneapolis. And Johnny and the different blogs that are out there were calling really for, you know, serious actions against African Americans. In fact, they said the young man, Mr. Parker, should actually be skinned. You know, man, I haven't heard that term in a long time. Skinned, burnt, hung, if you will, from a tree limb for his transgression, and et cetera. And I'm like, wow, you know, we don't have all the facts in. And then this comes on the heels of a very heroic effort by a man by the name of Alfred Flowers, who we've known. In fact, I think Mr. Flowers has called in, who Monday night stopped a vicious attack on a Caucasian after a game at North High School between North and Edison. And Mr. Flowers interceded, rescued the gentleman, put him in his vehicle, shielded him, and et cetera. And Johnny Northside and others of the so-called Northside white vigilante, by the way, they're forming a gun club, called the description of Mr. Flowers' Good Samaritan Act a lie until the victim, who is Caucasian, went online and confirmed that Mr. Flowers had, in fact, come to his aid. He was hit and beaten, if you will, and if it had been for Mr. Flowers coming down that street in his automobile, we may have had another fatality. But this whole situation involving Mr. Sonnenberg, a veteran, 69-year-old Caucasian, veteran of the Vietnam War, employed at a chemical company, et cetera. Now, Don, I'm just a little puzzled, because there have been four narratives on what happened inside that house at about 11:46 and 11:51, 11:52, about a 5-6 minute window, I mean, according to the police reports. The suspect, Mr. Parker, is being held on $2 million bond, but the judge ruled yesterday because he has a probation violation that he actually can be held indefinite, in perpetuity, if you will. But the first scenario, Don, was that young Mr. Parker came to the back door of the home there along the 3700 block and pounded on the door, and asked if he could be let in, that he was being chased by people with baseball bats. Now, this was being articulated in by police sources Friday afternoon, Friday evening, if you will, and also by the two daughters of the deceased. The wife, who also was in the home at the time of the murder, if you will, really has not said anything publicly except in documents given to the court, which are basically kind of stilted, if you will. So Mr. Parker asks that the police be called. Mr. Soltenberg, the deceased, calls 911, indicates his address. Johnny Northside, who, by the way, was given a copy of the 911 call by someone within the police department, oops, and made reference to it over the last couple of days. You can hear Mr. Parker in the background saying something, and then Mr. Parker comes on the phone for the 911 call. He, according to Johnny Northside and the authorities, gives a different address, which actually was right across the alley, the 3700 block on Bryant. And then there's no indication of any kind of violence or et cetera. Stoltenberg says, how soon will the police be here? They said they're en route. He hung up the phone. Now we have to move to his wife, if you will, who said in a affidavit yesterday that she actually had seen the young African-American running along the street, you know, if you will, heard him at the back door, heard her husband and him talking. Actually said she heard her husband on the phone. She didn't indicate that she heard young Mr. Parker, which is kind of interesting. And then she said the call concluded, and then she heard a shot. And before she could, I assume, move towards the kitchen, Mr. Parker came out of the kitchen holding a weapon, a gun, a Smith & Wesson. I would assume it was a .38 snub nose, if you will. And then at that point, Mr. Parker, according to particularly the daughters, the two daughters who were not there, by the way, narrative, Mr. Parker took the wife upstairs into a bedroom, locked the door, and there is some indication from sources that there was allegedly penetration in what was going to be a sexual act, okay? And then they heard noises downstairs. They came out of the bedroom, came down the stairs. The noises were being made by the first responding officer, who, in fact, is a African-American officer by the name of Eric Lukes, who is also the president of the Black Police Officers Association, who I understand is going to be nominated for an award for the way that he handled the situation. And how he handled it was, though he had not yet gained entry because he was attempting to kick the back door in, the wife of the deceased indicated that she would open the door. Allegedly, according to her daughters, on Friday and Saturday, they were saying that he shot my husband, but that didn't seem to come out in the court documents. And then she opened the door. Officer Lukes entered, secured, you know, the suspect, who was not armed. Interesting enough, the gun was back upstairs under the bed, you know. Now, here's what began to be difficult. Friday and Saturday, Don, everyone was left with the impression that Mr. Parker had entered that home armed and intended to, in fact, rob and then commit mayhem and murder. What happened was, when CSI got there and they ran, asked the ATF to run a check and et cetera, they found out that the gun was the deceased. This is Soltenberg's gun. It was his weapon. And also, he was wearing a holster. So when he opened the door for Mr. Parker, who was asking for safety, if you will, the deceased was armed with a .38 Smith & Wesson, if you will. Now, here's the thing that is troubling with this, because everyone that's still alive, if you will, on Mr. Soltenberg's part, indicated they had no idea who this African-American was. But Mr. Parker has an older brother who came on social media. You guys know about that social media stuff. You guys play with that a lot. and said it was not true that the residents at 37th and Aldridge knew his brother. They knew him also. And there were some additional things said. Maybe there are some people out there that will call in and enlighten us on additional things that were being said back and forth. But the brother, Corey, I think it is, disappeared as far as website kind of disappeared, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And so we really haven't heard anything more from him about if, in fact, the deceased and his wife knew young Mr. Parker, okay? But the other problem that's emerged is that there was quite a stock or a supply of guns and ammunition in the house.
Hmm.
And the media has not told you that. What the discussion is now is that they want to suppress that. They want to keep that stealthed, if you will, because the ATF is certainly apparently conducting an examination on the weapons and the ammunition. You know, one of the things that was said is that Mr. Schoenberg and his wife had befriended many of coloreds within the community, that oftentimes they would come to the home, young women would come to the home talking about how they were being abused by their pimps and drug dealers. Sounded like a little bit of light stereotype, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and that Mrs. Schoenberg would give them money and help them, you know, get their lives in order and et cetera. So I'm just not sure, Don, if we're getting a clear message here. And here's the other piece, you know, for so that folks understand that we understand sometimes. The previous day, on the 30th day of January 2014, there was a court proceeding in Anoka County involving one of the daughters in a matter pertaining to a rather large sum of money and a debt and default and et cetera. And then a couple days before, there had been an action taken. I understand from my sources and from my network, a action filed by the Director of Veterans Affairs in Washington, D.C., against the other sister and apparently a male who I would assume is her husband. So now we're looking at a situation where there was a lot of debt. Now we're hearing people talking in terms, well, there probably needs to be an examination of how many insurance policies were in force.
Mm.
Yeah. So these are things we would have hoped as black journalists that the white media in this city would have provided to temper the racial animus that exists in our city right now, because Johnny Northside and others have actually been calling for the deployment of white vigilantes and et cetera, and by any means necessary and what they feel to be appropriate, actions taken against any young African-American who is seen as a threat, whatever that's supposed to mean.
Yeah, Mr. Edwards, that's very interesting that you walked us through this. And I'm reading the complaint, and I'm looking at it from an investigative view and a military point of view. And on page 2, the first paragraph of the complaint, it reads, just quickly here, Witness A was interviewed by police officers.
Just indicate this to you from the studio. That's why I'm holding my hand up at you and pointing. The witness A would be the wife. There was no other witness other than the so-called perpetrator. So witness A, for clarification to our listening audience, is the wife. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Her shirt was torn. Her neck appeared red. Witness A explained that she was in the dining room of the home when the victim allowed the defendant to enter after the defendant was knocking loudly at the back door. The defendant appeared frantic, paranoid, and in some sort of distress.
Yes.
After the 911 call was placed, she heard the defendant ask the victim for a gun, a knife, a hat, and gloves.
Yes.
Witness heard heard a gunshot, then silence. Okay, there's several things wrong in that particular paragraph, or which strike me, and not literary wise, but just explaining the situation. You're going to make a 911 call, and then you're going to ask whoever you're talking to there for a gun, a knife, or a hat, or ask. He said ask. You know, and so that's very interesting, and I think there's a little bit more going on there, Mr. Edwards. What do you think? And we do have some callers.
Let me make this statement, then we want to get to our callers. I was disturbed by the affidavit filed with the Minnesota, with the Hennepin County District Court here on Monday and Tuesday. First of all, Don, and we'll get to our caller, please hold. You and I, you've been in the military. I am, you know, individual who has been around for a long time, have you know, been involved in Department of Justice activities, et cetera. You know, one of the fiercest battles that you ever will see is when two individuals are struggling over a weapon in which you know and understand that if you lose that battle, you're going to lose your life. I just don't understand how there was no noises, there was no cursing, there was no pleading, and et cetera, because these are two men fighting over a gun that was holstered. And by the way, I kind of question how the young man was able to engage the gun, tear it away from Mr. Sonnenberg, who is a pretty stocky man, and at the same time also understand how to engage the safety. So we have to assume that the victim had the Smith & Wesson in the casing and in the holster with the safety off, which is not a very wise thing to do if Mm-mm. you have as many weapons as was in that house, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I just don't understand at what point were there noises emanating from the kitchen as there was a supreme battle for survival, if you will. But let's get a caller.
Okay. Caller, you're live on the air, 232. Go ahead, please. Hello, caller. Okay, we'll put you back on hold. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Do you have a question?
Hello, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. Well, yes. You know, I guess there's a couple of things I really wanted to talk about, but I'm going to kind of stick in the vein that you gentlemen were talking about. You know, it's so unfortunate that we never really get the truth or real stories that we can put together that make plausible sense to these incidents that happen. You know, we turn the news on, we turn this. Somebody got shot. This happened. They knocked on the door, shot the man. But they never go through the sequence of events, mm-hmm. you know, so that we can kind of make up our minds to kind of determine what really happened. And this is the kind of pablum that we continue to get fed here in Minneapolis. And you know, with cable, I'm able to watch the Chicago stations. I'm actually able to watch New York and play around the country, you know, through cable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the level of pablum that we're fed here on these serious incidents, when people die, when people are shot, and when police are involved, and to not give us a plausible story for anyone that has any kind of a mind to digest, you know, you lose faith in it. You know, I don't know. Am I on the wrong track, guys? Or
no, sir. No, okay. you're absolutely on the correct track, particularly in light of, and I want to repeat again, that it was interesting how the information was withheld for almost 48 hours that the deceased, the victim, I mean, we are not making light of the fact that a human being has lost their life, a man who was a veteran of the United States Armed Forces, a resident of his abode for 30 years, and et cetera. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know how many people go to somebody's house, particularly when they know, as the young man's brother pointed out, that that family is known, when you know that this individual is always armed. I just don't know how many people, though they're now saying that that young man has a mental problem and et cetera, so that adjustment was made pretty quick. But I don't know many people that go to rob somebody and they don't have a weapon, and they know that the other person does, that they're going to rob. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
see, those are the points that I try to make. That's, as those things come out, things don't add up. You know?
No.
And as we listen to it and as we have a mind, we can hear, well, one and one, it doesn't make three. You know, two and two doesn't make five.
That's right. That's right. Also, let me say this that we've talked about. We're greatly disappointed as journalists, Mr. Allen and myself, that the authorities, you know, the county attorney who is, you know, legendary for his venom when he's talking in terms of a black perpetrator, particularly a black perpetrator against a Caucasian citizen in this county. And I'm trying to understand why there has been pretty much of a cap on the amount of guns in that house, if you will. I mean, what was the need? I mean, of course, certainly, because I am myself, the deceased could be a member of the National Rifle Association, a gun collector, and et cetera. But you kind of always wonder, no matter how bad we're being told the neighborhood is, but, you know, he had lived there for 30 years, and he was helping black young women and others who were having problems that came to his home for help and et cetera, right? You know, magnanimous in his activities, but... You're wearing a gun at all times in the privacy of your home. You have deadbolt locks and et cetera, and you have an arsenal in your home. And I'm like you, sir. My question is just to kind of give us all the facts, particularly given the racial animus that is now gripping our city, led by Johnny Northside and others, that you know, every Negro, you know, particularly like us, black males, you, I, him, we should just be taken out and just executed, you know, because we're black.
Well, as you say, Ron, it's in the open. And, Ron, you're doing a very, you know, very self, you know, perpetrating thing by keeping yourself protected. because you know, the radar is really out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the thing is, we're not trying to, you know, it's like my dad would say, you know, I don't want to change the game. I just want to let me play. You know, let me come to the plate. Let me get a chance. If I can make a hit, let me make and be a success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's this holding back, this, you know, and not giving the facts. But, Ron, I want to digress for just a minute, if I could.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to digress to is this caucus where individuals broke out into a fight the other night. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Four separate fights at Brian Coyle.
At the Brian Coyle Center.
I don't know how many. At Stewart, I think at least two. But go ahead.
Yeah, it broke out into a fight. And this was a peaceful, you know, a caucus where individuals get together to see who they want to vote for their communities, to put their representatives up there. But from what I understand and from what I saw, and again, the media is always, you have to take it with a grain of salt, but it sounded like that it broke out into a fight.
It did.
And it sounded like it broke out into the individuals that wanted to go for their person, for their candidate, and they didn't like the other candidate, and rather than listen to the other candidate, it broke out into a fight. And these, from what I understand, it was at the Bryant Coyle Center, and that they may have been Somali individuals or Somali community purporting their candidate.
Let me just absolutely clarify, because your question is a timely one, because again, I don't know where we get the facts.
And I didn't
there
want to change the subject.
There is a division in the Somali community in the so-called Cedar Riverside area as it pertains to the candidacy of the long-term state representative, 40 years, in fact, she's been there.
Oh, I know, yeah. PhD.
And a challenger, okay. And what happened was an attorney, a white attorney by the name of Brian Rice, really agitated the situation in many regards by coming in and setting up a table. And I'm not sure who thought that they could deny him the right to do that. I mean, I know Brian Rice knew his father, Big Jim Rice, the political boss of the North Side in the 1950s and 60s. But that's when the fighting started. But it was amongst Somalis, okay? Those who supported one candidate, Somali candidate, over the incumbent 40-year state representative. Now, what was so bad about this situation is that the first three times that the police came in and broke up the fighting, state DFL officials indicated that they could handle it and asked the police to excuse themselves. The fourth time, I think everybody, particularly when a couple of political individuals, you know, were slapped, hit, pushed down, or et cetera, and that included fighting amongst staff of council members and the city council. As I reported early on this program, and I repeat it again, is that Councilwoman Elizabeth Glidden, Democrat 8th Ward, actually went up and attempted to get some kind of you know, arrest facilitation against another staff person within the city council because this person slapped the staff member of either Ms. Glidden, and I do believe that's who it was, or another council member. What they've basically been told, they need to put that in the hands of Council President Barb Johnson. That seems to be a council problem. And if the folks can't bring themselves under control, they need to be fired. We just can't have that kind of atmosphere inside of the city council.
Well,
this is our governing body.
But see, and I look at that. Okay, these things have to happen. You know, you have the right to assemble. You have the right to put your candidates. This is a process. The caucus leads to, you know, the election. But my thing is that if this was a body, an area where there was African Americans, don't you know?
Oh,
they
had the National Guard.
They would have pulled every paddy wagon, the National Guard, every paddy wagon. Now, see, Ron, you know what a paddy wagon is. See, a lot of people may not know what a paddy wagon is. But
that's right. I go way back in the old days. That's right. We used to call it the Black Mariah.
They would pull everyone and throw everybody in there.
Yeah.
Let me pose a question.
What is going on in our city when you know a group of people can come in, upstarts, and the guy that's going for the seat, you know, he just got appointed to a seat. I guess one of the Somali individuals had passed away, and he was appointed.
Minneapolis School Board. You're talking about North.
Within weeks, now he's going to take over this. You know, this individual who has been a representative for many years, you know,
40,
PhD,
40.
Professor. He's going to just walk over her and just come in. Well, why is this, Ron? Do you have any answers for that? I'd like to know.
Oh, yes, I do, but we don't have enough time. But one of the answers is to our beloved Somali brothers and sisters who...
And I am, too. I am, too. But
okay.
I really, really need to know.
Yeah, well, here's part of what it is. Welcome to American Politics 101, dirty politics, manipulative politics, deceptive politics. You know, sometimes people come to these shores and really believe what it is they see on the Statue of Liberty, even if they come in through Canada, who actually believe that that democracy is at work and we love you and et cetera, and they don't know that it's all a game. Ask the Native Americans, okay, who were you know, banished for all practical purposes from this continent, how, you know, folks will tell you one thing. In fact, they'll even stand there and hold a Holy Bible in their hand, you know, tell you you need to get religion while we get your land, okay? And so what has happened is that sometimes people have not stopped to really analyze what is surrounding them and see already the system has the Somali community at war with itself. Yeah. And that is a long dissertation in and of itself with regards to already what has happened, how it's happened. In fact, I've already heard statements such as, well, you know, one individual just got here in 2009 and actually had lived most of their life in England, in London, where they went to the best of schools
is,
and et cetera.
Why the hands-off policy? Why the hands-off policy? You know, why the come over here and then 2 weeks I can be a representative and then 2 weeks later I'm going for the city council? Nobody's heard of you. You've never been here. Why can an individual that's been here on the school board for 3 months, they name a street after him when he's passed away? I mean, not that I begrudge anybody's accomplishments,
But, I mean, we've had so many people here from the Twin Cities area and the African-American community that have been patriarchs of this community. And why would somebody be honored that, you know.
Well, let's think, so the people don't think that we are just generalizing. The first African-American and female mayor of this city was Sharon Sells Belton. It took 12 years after she had left office, after being betrayed and stabbed in the back, and losing to R.T. Ryback, it took 12 years to name a footbridge for her. The legendary and first African-American to ever serve on the city council, Van White, it took 15 years to put a plaque in.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, your question is almost self-explanatory.
Yeah, it is. But okay. I'm going to let it go. I'm going to say one more thing, Ron. I support you and Don all the way. But I have to just give a shout out to my man. Last week you gave a real good tribute to Mr. Matt Little.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in the community with them, you know, with his daughters, his sons, and I grew up
with
all of them. Mm-hmm. I knew him. Matter of fact, my father-in-law had an 80th birthday party, and Mr. Little was here at my house.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Davis was here at my house.
Mm-hmm.
My father.
That's Harry Davis Sr. You're talking about Harry Davis Sr., right?
Harry Davis Sr. But, you know, just to listen to those men and talk to them about the history of Minneapolis and how they came up and how it was. And, you know, those guys paved the way. And hopefully, you know, you guys are still trying to get it going, but you guys need more. Everybody's got to get on board again.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, brother, thank you. Appreciate the call. Okay.
Okay, take care.
Okay, Mr. Eric, I need to interject something there, what he was talking about at the Brian Cole Center there. You know, the factions, the people for Ms. Phyllis Kahn, and for the other candidate, the Somali candidate.
Nor.
Well, you know, the executive director of the DFL was there. Okay, Corey Day was there.
There was a lot
of heavyweight people. And those people, you know, they're looking at what's going on, and they're trying to push their agenda. And I think I talked to a Somali law student today who said they are tired of this Americanizing of the Somali community and this divide and conquer. And he said that will not happen. He says those that go that way will be, what did he say? He had a word for expelling, but it was a little bit harsher from the community.
Yes, I got you.
A little bit harsher word. And so, I mean, it's out there. I see, you know, I'm the second vice president of the NAACP. We have three Somali officers.
Oh, by the way, it was your third vice president was attacked and beaten last night.
Yeah, that's who it was. It was the third vice president of the
NAACP.
NAACP.
I expect the NAACP will probably speak on this, I assume. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
somebody might. But anyway, don't get me going. You know, the problem we have here is a situation that, you know, I remember Richard Pryor used to talk about the Chinese and Japanese, you know, when they came to town.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a problem here that you have a group that is almost above, and sociology people will tell you this, that consider themselves better than black Americans, and black Americans are the lowest thing on the totem pole, especially black men, okay, black men, you know, and they'd rather spit on a black man. I mean, I've told you this before, Mr. Edwards. I've been downtown Minneapolis in a suit trying to hail a cab on 7th Avenue during rush hour, and I had four or five folks drive right by me. You know, and I could see if I was like, you know, my pants hanging down to my ankles and a hat on sideways and a leather jacket.
Baseball cap.
That was just really, really shocking. And one time, you know, I needed a cab ride from the Target Center to the IDS. It was very cold outside. I wanted to hop in a cab. I would have been glad to give that cab driver $5. That's the minimum fare downtown, $5. The dude told me, I will give you $1 for the bus. I don't want such a small fare. So
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, I mean, we have things going on in our city, but we don't. But let's flip the script here. We have nobody. Let me put it like this. We have no black agencies dealing with the trauma of cultural insertion into another cultural insertion that combines two of the same colors but with completely different cultures. Okay, there's some serious trauma going on there, and people aren't paying attention to that. And what's happening, it's festering. Like the gentleman,
oh,
you and
yes,
the gentleman,
it is. Yes, it
like
is.
You,
yes,
what
it
you
is.
And the gentleman just said a couple of minutes ago, you know, if that, if there was, if that had been me and you popping someone in the head, you know, with our hands and starting a fight, we'd be under the jail right now.
Oh, yeah. And there would have been an in-depth analysis of who we were and who, what gang or thugs we were affiliated and associated with and et cetera. And you're absolutely right. That was a very compelling observation by the gentleman because they're kind of trying to keep a lid on it. But I got to tell you, it escalated today when city council members were asking that other city council members, staff personnel, be punished, if you will, and be arrested, if you will, because, you know, the matter was taken to the chief of police.
Okay,
a lot of discussion going on about this.
Yeah, Mr. Edwards, why is Betsy Hodges so silent?
The mayor?
The mayor,
I don't know. I understand that, you know, she was requiring a briefing from the liaison in the police department to whatever it is, Sherman Patterson, who used to be the liaison in the mayor's office. There's a new female African-American now in the mayor's office. They were gathering the facts, but apparently Ms. Glidden, council member Elizabeth Glidden, Democrat 8th Ward, already had her facts, and personnel had the bruises, scratches, and other kinds of things. Now we're hearing that a group of individuals of some young Somalis are saying that they were brutally assaulted and that police refused to initiate any kind of action and et cetera. So this is taking on a life of its own, and it'll be very interesting to watch it over the coming weeks because it may very well be out of control. And I continue to be concerned because of the explosion along Cedar Avenue on what was it, January 1st.
That no one's talking about. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm talking about the explosion in which the city tried to get CenterPoint, the gas utility, to say that it was a gas explosion. CenterPoint said they'll be damned if they would do that, that it was not a gas leak. The ATF and others have been in there in Ruin City. It's a tough scene, crime scene, because of the debris and the ice and et cetera. And, you know, we've been below zero now for a month and a half. And so that's real dangerous. And if there is any kind of explosive device, you know what I mean, got to be real careful down there. So you've got to get the right people in who know their ordinance, if you will. I'm talking about explosives, that term ordinance. And so we would have thought as citizens here in the city of Minneapolis. Let's get the call. Go ahead.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please. Yes, you. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Me.
Yes, that's you.
Yes. Yes, I'm calling out North Minneapolis. I really wanted to comment on the incident that took place with the young man and the gentleman getting his life taken.
You're talking about the young man, Mr. Parker. Yeah, go right ahead, sir. What's your observation?
Yeah, well, my observation is just like straight from the complaint. It's some holes in that story because that young man that they're talking about, Parker, he's a little bitty dude. He's a little skinny dude. And for this gentleman that lost his life, how big and stocky he is and the experience that he has just from being a person in the street, like you said, there was no struggle. There was no fight. It's something about that just don't make sense. And, you know, for individuals to be so gun conscious, to have, you know, a vast number of guns in their house, they would protect that gun even if somebody snatched it. That's going to be a whole nother fight in itself. It's just not going to be easy. So, you know, just looking at the story, man, and, you know, all these incidences, you know what I'm saying? I remember a couple years back when Obama first got elected, you know, it was a new KKK member who said that if there isn't a race riot, they would start a race riot. right? So around all these little towns where you have, especially around here where you have these secret militia and secret organization gun clubs popping up, you know, mm-hmm. these are the same vigilante mindsets that, you know, that picture of the three men being hung in Duluth. That's that same mindset, you know. So
absolutely
I just want
correct,
to say
sir.
That.
You're absolutely
I just
correct.
Want individuals to protect themselves. If you're young and black like myself, yeah, you know I mean, because the hunt is on.
Yes, it is, my brother, in more ways than one. And I appreciate you calling in and remind people that in the last 48 hours on the white websites, they have called for the formation of, though they've already had them, as this caller is just pointing out, secret militias and et cetera have been, you know, knocking black folk and Native Americans off for a long time. But they are calling for, quote-unquote, vigilante actions and movements and a retaliation for whatever reason that means. Appreciate your call, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don, give that number one more time. We've got about 9 minutes.
5 minutes.
You know,
yeah,
I think there's a lot of people out there that have questions about this whole tragedy at 30 along the 3700 block of Aldridge Avenue North. And as I said before, I'm just trying to understand, was the deceased, was he a licensed gun dealer or what? I mean, you know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That number is 347-426-3904. Again, our direct dial call-in number is 347-426-3904. You know, Mr. Edwards, it's kind of concerning me here, and I have it set to run over a little bit if we have to, you know.
Okay. All right.
And we'll still be on the air. But the thing is, you know, I'm thinking back. I went back to 2008 and all these initiatives that were taken on by the school district, by the Minneapolis Urban League, by Shiloh International Ministries and Bishop Howell there, and the different little sprout agencies that got a buck here or a buck there to address this catastrophic failure, which we call black-on-black violence or black violence, period, in the Twin Cities, or in North Minneapolis, I should say. And it mm-hmm. seems to me that the areas that, you know, they have concentrated on, I mean, R.T. Rybak did a great job with gentrification. You know, he brought couples out of Bloomington and the different suburbs and moved them right off 26. And it did kind
yeah,
of change
yeah,
the face
sure
of
did.
The neighborhood. But it, mm-hmm. but what they forgot to do is they forgot the economic development piece. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Those people were still poor. And so nothing happened. And so you still have this crime. You still have this... you know, these police running into houses, you know, busting doors down and just all types of day over North Minneapolis. And I guess my question is, you know, where is our congressman for the 5th Congressional District? Where is our state rep? Where is our senator? And what are they doing politically, and our nonprofits? What are they doing politically and financially and program-wise to address a lot of this stuff? Because okay, Mr. Edwards, I lived in Seattle, Denver, New York, a few places around the United States before. And
mm-hmm.
if something of this nature happened in the black community, there's a mechanism in those black communities where it has a president of the Minneapolis, like president of an Urban League, president of an NAACP, president of an African-American Leadership Forum, immediately calling the media, getting on TV, and making a statement. That statement could be anything to, you know, we apologize that this happened. We're going to look into it, and we're going to sort the facts out, and we will report to the community. And he's doing that on a mainstream radio station, television station. Here.
That takes effort.
Know,
that takes effort, energy, and knowledge, though, doesn't it? Oops.
Yeah, it does. It takes what some people don't have. And so, especially some around here. But the thing is, you know, you can bypass these racist bastards who want to do things and not, you know, and want to form militias and do hate stuff, and it's just ridiculous. And so until we get that mechanism running, because once it starts and once it's up, if it ever gets up, Mr. Edwards, A equals B, B equals C, and there's a process that you go through every time without changing to address the inward, the trauma, and the outwards, what we say to the general
sure.
public. The problem is now
absolutely.
A goes to B, B goes, I'm going to give you some C, and C is cash, and then they go away.
Well, I think that's a keen and compelling analysis, if you will, of what has happened. I've been rather shocked in the last 72 hours, given the kind of postings that are being made. And I saw similar postings after the murder of T.T. Franklin back on May 10th of last year. People quite comfortable with talking in terms of taking lethal action against African Americans and then being, you know, judged innocent of any culpability. I call it the Zimmerman Doctrine after what happened in, you know, in Florida. And it's just been wild. And I was just so surprised that, you know, that our organizations, leadership, and et cetera, had not questioned what this was doing. I mean, there used to be a time when, you know, ecumenical coalitions would immediately come together, Jewish rabbis, you know, Lutheran pastors, black ministers, and et cetera, and try to defuse something. And it's not happening. I mean, I have to tell you, there have been some very vicious and detailed reflections about how, you know, young blacks need to have their heads blown off, need to be hung off trees. And, you know, given, as this caller just pointed out, I mean, given all of the unsolved murders that we have around here, mysterious deaths, disappearance, and et cetera, and you see, I don't disagree with the last caller to the extent that there are, in fact, death squads that have been operating in this country for a long time based on race.
And we have a caller, Mr. Edwards.
Let's go.
Caller, you're live on the air. That is you, Mr.
Hey.
Yes.
One observation I wanted to make was that we have a mayor who ran on the One Minneapolis theme, you know, eliminating inequalities and that sort of thing. But as I've pointed out, we have widespread covert discrimination in the housing and job market, yet no government agency empowered to detect and prosecute the discriminators.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a problem when the overall unemployment rate in Minneapolis is 5%, but it's 30% on the north side.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the underlying. I think that's an underlying issue. There's massive discrimination. You know, keeping people in poverty is a form of violence.
In fact, it's employment for some segments of the population. Employment for them to supervise those who are in poverty. Yes, absolutely, sir. Excellent point. Excellent point. By the way, on that particular note that our new mayor has pointed out, I find it rather disturbing that just in the last 10 days, she has suspended the promotion list and in the process eliminated two highly decorated African-American officers, Tony Adams, 22 years, Richard Lillard, 19 years. She blocked them, along with the chief, blocked them from being promoted to sergeant. Now, I do say this. The Police Federation, I've just been informed in the last 24 hours, is grieving that situation. In other words, they're challenging the actions of the chief and the silence of the mayor. And so, you know, these are things, caller, that I think is incumbent that we must talk about and put out there. Now, Mr. Allen and I are oftentimes being told through covert kinds of measures that we shouldn't discuss these kinds of things. Let's just talk in terms of how great, as our congressman did on a radio program here over the weekend. He just said things are just wonderful. And yet we are the most economically depressed, undereducated congressional district in the United States for all practical purposes.
You're absolutely correct, Mr. Edwards.
Yeah, there are people, there are congressional districts in the Appalachia, in Kentucky and West Virginia and down into some parts of Tennessee where people have a better quality of life than African Americans do in the 5th Congressional District in Minnesota. So I don't, you know, but as long as there's silence, as long as people are comfortable with those kinds of statements by an elected politician in an election year, by the way, because the congressman from the 5th Congressional District here in Minnesota is up for reelection. But he said on Sunday that everything is wonderful. Things are great. Everything is going great. You know, I almost started whistling the song of the South, Zippity-Doo-Dah, Zippity-Day. You know what I mean? All right, Mr. Allen, it looks like we're moving on.
Yeah.
Hope that we responded to that caller, unless we have another call holding.
We have another caller.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's get them, and then you say we're going to be able to run over for a number of minutes?
Yes, yes. Yes, we are. Caller 155037, you are live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to go back to the topic about Betsy Hodges not commenting on this current murder that happened in North Minneapolis.
Uh-huh.
My question is, so there's been several murders already since she's been in office, including
and
one.
And she hasn't commented on any of them. I mean, I'll just anticipate your observation. She's not commenting on any of them.
And I did try to search today because several people in my Facebook group are continually bringing up the topic. I found one in South Minneapolis who seemed like a good citizen who was shot. And I couldn't find anything that said she commented on that. So I'm curious as to why they seem so incensed that she's not commenting on this one. And maybe I just missed the fact that she commented on the other one.
Oh, we can talk about it on this program. I can't speak for other people in other mediums. But we have talked about this since her ascending to the office. But, you know, the person that held the office before her, he didn't comment either.
Mm-hmm. Right. So he never commented either.
Yeah.
And if she's not going to comment on African Americans' murder or Hispanic men's murder, then I'm not sure that it's her place to step up and comment on this one.
No. We're going a little bit deeper than that. And the deepness is that she and others know that the true story is not being told about what happened in that house at 11:52 a.m. Central Standard Time. She is informed on a continuous basis by her chief and her law enforcement and et cetera. They know that that's a bogus story. Also, I would think that people would be concerned about the amount of weapons that were found in that house, you know?
So was that in the police report the court reports that there was more than one weapon?
Yes. To your question and whoever you may be, dear, yes, there is. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No, I just hadn't read that.
It's in documents filed under seal by our beloved county attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. See, here's what's happening on that. Excellent question that you've asked. Because of the volume of weapons that were found, the ATF, who is the governing entity, if you will, in this country to investigate weapons and et cetera, decided that they needed to conduct an exhaustive examination of the weapons to determine where they came from, were they legally bought, were they illegally bought, were they stolen, or et cetera. And so that is a kind of a tedious process. Let me just go back. It came to a head when the CSI, the criminal investigators, were conducting a search. See, initially, they couldn't find the gun. They went back up to the bedroom, and the gun was under the bed. Of course, immediately the forensic experts took the gun, put down the serial number, et cetera, et cetera. When they called it up on the computer, the gun was the property of the deceased. Now, as we said earlier, the deceased was carrying a holster on his side. And, of course, it was empty. And, of course, that had caught the attention of the first arriving officers and investigators. But until they found the weapon, they weren't clear what that meant, or at least that's the position that they took. And once it was determined that it was his weapon, and then when these other weapons were found in different locations in the house in significant volume, they said, ooh, you know, Houston, we got a problem. Okay?
Correct.
Now, my concern is what you said is correct if you want to balance it out that way, if she doesn't say anything about Hispanics or Hmongs or whites who are being killed, and, you know, why should she say anything about another white that was allegedly killed by a young African-American? But my concern as a longtime activist and et cetera is the venom, the hostility, what is appearing on these blogs talking in terms of, quote-unquote, doing murderous things to African-Americans. That's the kind of situation that does nothing but further racial animus and tragedy. And so I would just think that a mayor would want to step up and say, hey, let's tone it down, let's get a handle. You know what I mean? So
yes,
that's our observation here.
A rush to buy guns, a rush to take gun permit classes and cut this young man's head off and hanging on the Lowry Bridge. And I think that people are angry, but I think their response is so inappropriate, and they're just not, they're not thinking rationally, but it's scary to live in that environment in this neighborhood.
And you pointed out that you were certainly a resident of that neighborhood up there, and you're absolutely correct. But let me say this to you, my friend. You probably need to begin to be concerned about who it is that's selling these youngsters these weapons. You see, that's what you really want to kind of take a look at, because there are not enough burglaries and robberies of gun stores for all the weapons that these youngsters have. See, for 5 years I served on the Department of Justice's Oversight Committee for the Minneapolis Police Department, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Though long before that I had served on numerous occasions in that capacity. So I've had a long history of watching, examining, policing, if you will, and who provides what, like guns and drugs, if you will. But I'll just leave you with that. Because if you're a part of that community, if you belong to your block club, maybe have the commander in the 4th Precinct explain to you what their investigations have shown about how these youngsters are coming in possession of all these guns. And by the way, these are not old, rusty pistols. Some of these guns just came out of the oil wrappers, if you will, oil wrappers being what you use when a weapon is sold. It is to preserve it and et cetera. Maybe you need to have the chief come out and talk a little bit to your group and to your community and to yourself personally, and I assume that you probably have children and that you're concerned. Have them explain to you who in the heck is bringing these guns into our community.
Definitely will do that. Thank you.
All right. All right. Thank you. God
Bye.
Bless.
You
all
too.
Right. Well, Mr. Evers, we can go ahead and wrap it up.
Okay, Don, I guess so. Yeah. Excellent question, though. I appreciate it. The question and examination by the caller. All right, then. Well, you know, we'll be back next week.